We've got a few topics to discuss this week. Then we have a little bit something different toward the end of the show. And again, we're recording the week before the week that includes the 4th of July around the world and Independence Day in the U.S. because I'll be traveling in the week that you're listening to this. So we don't know about all the massive changes in beta 3
of iOS 16. Or the release of Apricard on Tuesday.
Right, or all the fancy new Marzipan apps, the original four. They're so different now.
But we will be back the week after, so don't worry.
We will be. So what we do have to discuss is first thing we want to mention is today, that on the day that we're recording, there's a new smart light product from Philips Hue, which is a version of the Philips Hue smart light bulbs that work with HomeKit, but these have Bluetooth support built in, and they don't work with HomeKit because they don't require a bridge. And for Philips Hue, they work with over the Zigbee protocol, creating a mesh network. And so the bridge itself is what adds HomeKit support to those. These new lights, they don't work with HomeKit. They work with Amazon's voice assistant and Google assistant, but not HomeKit without the bridge. The idea here is that there's a lower barrier of entry, like for setup and everything. You don't need the bridge. So you just, hook them up and then you pair it with your phone through the app. And in some cases, you can even buy them from Amazon with the same account that you use on your Echo product. And then that will make it automatically work together with the Echo. So it's different, but.
They come prepared to your account.
They can, yeah. And if they're not, then you can tell your Echo to find discover devices, and because of how they're configured, it will find them easily without needing to do anything in the Philips Hue app. From what I understand,
Only if there was another company that was quite large and was well known for integrating hardware, software, and services.
Imagine buying a HomePod or an Apple TV with like light bulbs bundle or something.
Yeah,
it can be a little bit pricier, but they all work and there's no configuration. It just shows up in the home app and it's just like that. Like, it's bad that Amazon and Google are offering a better smart home experience, at least in the setup area. I prefer HomeKit when you're actually using it, and I think it's easier to learn and doesn't change as often. But at least in setup, Google and Amazon, for some categories of products, are doing a better setup process than what Apple's doing with HomeKit.
Yeah, like, you should be able to go onto like the Apple online store and just order some smart lights. And when they come in, you just plug them in. They can be Bluetooth, because although these Philips Hue ones don't work with HomeKit over Bluetooth, there are Bluetooth HomeKit lights in pretty wide availability. I tested one from like Kugi because they're my card. It worked perfectly fine. And there's loads of other ones as well. You should just be able to like go onto the Apple store, buy some of those, and then when they ship to your house, you just screw them into the light, to the light fixture. And then they just connect by themselves.
The home app discovers it. Maybe only if you have a hub, like an Apple TV, iPad, or HomePod, like that could be some requirement there. But if you have those things, then that could be a benefit.
Yeah, and it doesn't have to be Apple lights necessarily. Oh, that'd be kind of cool if they, did actually start making their own.
Yeah, it could be like a level of partnership with some other company like GE.
Yeah, exactly. Or, even Logitech. They love partnering Logitech. Maybe Logitech gets into, the HomeKit space. Or even Philips Hue, right? They could do some special, partnership where...
HomeKit Plus.
Yeah, or, they only sell... These bulbs are only available when you buy them through Apple, because they have all those, random accessories in the Apple store, which are only at Apple. And most of the time, it's, the same thing you can buy from Amazon, but in an exclusive color, right? They just have a color where it's only in the Apple store. So if you had, Philips Hue Bluetooth bulbs that would pair to your iCloud account or your Apple ID when you're buying through the Apple store, where you already logged into your Apple ID, for instance, that would be really, really nice. It just doesn't really happen. And the HomeKit setup is definitely, a bit wonky at the moment.
Yeah. Goals. but as a product themselves, I think it's a little bit confusing because they add Bluetooth, but they still have Zigbee. And then you can only do up to 10 lights per app when you use the Bluetooth method, if you need more than 10 lights, which I think is pretty common. If you have two bulbs in a lamp and then three bulbs in a ceiling, you can get to 10 pretty quickly. and they're not like way cheaper. You can find the old version on sale for, or not even old version, like, but like the version without Bluetooth on sale for the same prices. But if you want to add more than 10, then you need to have the bridge. Obviously, if you want to do HomeKit, you need the bridge from Philips Hue. If you want to do a third party app, like there's a lot of really cool apps that do cool things with color effects that work with Hue, but you need to have the bridge for that to work. Cause it connects with the bridge. If you want to do the Friends of Hue hardware stuff, like the really cool Lutron switch that replaces the wall switch, or like goes over the wall switch so it can't be turned off, and it's like a rotating dimmer and you can click it to turn it on and off, that requires the Hue bridge because it's under the Friends of Hue category. So there's a lot of scenarios where these are really just for getting started as like a smart home, not enthusiast, but like you're a curious person, and you want like as little setup as possible, like maybe even for like relatives. But if you want to do anything that's more sophisticated, then you still need the bridge, which is like, it usually comes bundled at a discount with the starter kit from Hue. If you buy it separately, then you're not going to be saving as much money, I don't think. So it's not a huge, you know, development, but I think the more interesting thing here is how, what they can achieve through automatic setup for people that, yeah, that you can't do with HomePod or with HomeKit. And even with Amazon Echo, like they do some, I don't know, like if it's creepy or not, but they do some things where they configure your Echo speaker if you order it from Amazon with your account and like not buy it in a Best Buy, you know, from the shelf where it has your account set up.
Yeah, that's, and like, for that's media, like what the Kindle was, right?
Exactly, like the Kindle, yeah. And I mean, with Mac stuff, like if you're a company buying, you know, machines for your employees, like you can do all that pre-configuration, I guess, yourself, like maybe not from Apple, but something like that could work, I think.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Apple has an enterprise program even for iOS devices where they can be shipped pre-connected to an MDM server, basically, so they, yeah, come automatically connected to the enterprise network. They just,
yeah,
haven't made that jump to do it for like end customers as well, especially like, if you had like the iPhone upgrade program. That would be a cool, yeah, perk where, you know, when you get your iPhone traded in, they send you a new one in the post, it's already connected to your account and stuff. I'm sure there's like encryption complexity and privacy problems and all, you know, it's one of those things that sounds a lot easier to say than it is. And when you,
well, and what are the differences in your, you know, iCloud backup last night and then today when you receive your phone,
yeah,
you know, and you'd have to figure out the differences there, and so that's up to date for real, but there could be like a base level of data, and then the differences get pushed over and it'd be way faster.
Yeah, and they've obviously tried to like mitigate in other ways by doing the thing where you can just like hold your old phone near the new phone and it transfers some of the information over, and you know, things like, I think even in iOS 13 now there's a new like transfer directly option, which is kind of, mm-hmm, like doing an iCloud backup, but there's no iCloud involved. It just like sends all of your data from the phone, you know, locally over the network, mm-hmm, rather than you having to like, so if you don't have enough iCloud space, you can still let you do like a full transfer, which is pretty cool.
That's like the materialization of when Tim Cook said we're going to improve transfers for new customers so they can upgrade, and that won't be a barrier of entry for upgrading your iPhones when sales were
slower. Yeah, it's like a direct corollary to like Migration Assistant on the Mac now, where you don't have, mm-hmm, to rely on a cloud service. You can just do, yeah, it straight out, which is, you know, a nice touch. And but it is true that setting up an iPhone is way more complicated. It involves way more, you know, rigmarole for on the customer and obviously on Apple's end than compared to a Kindle, where, you know, it's just like a list of books at the end of the day versus, yeah, carrier setup, iCloud setup, photo, all of that stuff. Like, it's
especially
just
if you have an Apple Watch.
Yeah, exactly. Like, obviously there's, you know, plenty of complications, but it does seem like there's more Apple could do there if they really tried it, even if not with their like first-party devices, but with the accessories market.
And they probably will at the rate that they've been going to.
Like, yeah.
It's not, it wouldn't be insane that they would do that. So, yep. Also, another new accessory is a new stand from 12 South that you covered because it, I think, particularly interests you. So what's 12 South doing that you like?
Yeah, so a few weeks ago on this show, we were talking about like the use of Qi, wireless charging, and especially when the AirPods second generation came out, and obviously, mm-hmm, you know, people are using the mats now. I think you use Qi exclusively, right? Pretty much?
For iPhone, I do. And for the watch, I've got the Nomad charger with the iPhone puck included. But when PowerBeats Pro came out, then I switched from using AirPods primarily to using PowerBeats Pro. And so they've got to be charged by Lightning. That's like the only complaint for me. The case size, don't even care that it's bigger. It works for me. But it doesn't have Qi. And so it's like it's really nice to be able to go all in on Chi if you can, and that's what's holding me back now. When I was had a few weeks of AirPods with wireless charging,
yeah, still so, have them, but yeah, so I'm still on the iPhone AirPods combo, and I'm currently still using the wire. But one thing I said is that I'm kind of looking for like a vertical charger option for the phone for the desk, which would obviously then be Qi, and then maybe there'd be like a watch component as well. Obviously, we talked about those, you know, stand-up ones before. This one from 12 South is a bit different in that it's a stand for the iPhone first and foremost, but it looks quite nice, and it's like made of chrome and, you know, like synthetic leather, I'm pretty sure, on the bottom, and, you know, it's sturdy. It's a successor to their like high-rise line, which is quite popular, but this is like the high-rise wireless. And what it is it takes the normal stand and it puts like this loop in the back, which fits in like a puck, basically, which is like a, you know, capsule shape Qi charger. So while it's on the stand, it can charge the phone. But what's nice about it is that the Qi bit can pop out, and you can just take the Qi pad on its own as like a, you know, like a travel charger. Mm-hmm. So, because I have this problem with my, you know, when I'm in the wired world and I want to go somewhere for a day, I have to like unplug it from the wall and then unplug it from the thing and then take it around. It's like, well, if I could just leave the stand where it is and just pull out the thing that's inside it, that's actually quite appealing. And obviously, then you could then charge the AirPods on it too, because this still has the problem with, you know, the vertical height not being able to support the AirPods case, you know, standing up. But obviously, if the Qi, they call it the power disc, but whatever, when that power pack can pop out, you can obviously just charge the AirPods flat, or even charge your phone flat if you want to, and then stick it in your bag and take it with you. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a pretty cool option. So I'm going to try that out, actually.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. I like that idea. I like the idea of taking it with you. That's a really cool thing. Like, even the Nomad charger I have, I love it. It's the one that can do two devices, like including like one iPhone or an iPhone and then an AirPods case, and then also has the watch puck into it. It's awesome, but like the way I have it at my bedside table now, and so the cord goes under my nightstand and behind my bed, and it's not super easy to get to, and it's like a special, like, just works for that charger cord, not like a, you know, something that you can have like two of, but just by chance. And so while it is like the perfect travel charger, I've noticed just and not thinking about it that I still tend to have like a travel bag of chargers and not that like one charger, which would be convenient because it's like one plug in the wall, great for like hotels. But because I've got to also like kind of like move my mattress up to get to the brick in the wall, I've not yet done that. So I don't know. Also, I feel like when you travel, like wireless is great for overnight, and if you can reliably have like overnight charging, then that's great. But if you're find yourself like maybe in a pinch, then you want a wire too. So that's something. And then the last thing on Qi on this topic is I love the number of portable batteries that have Qi on the battery itself, because that's so cool. Like, you've got a battery pack that you can take with you, and you just like, you know, if you can like lay your phone there for a little while, you can wirelessly charge your phone or whatever else. And this is all before like iPhone 11 comes out with wireless charging on the backside too. So,
yeah. What I'm waiting for is Anker. And they sell it on Apple stores in the US now. They sell a MacBook Pro USB-C charger, wall charger sized brick that acts as a USB-C charger with full like 100 watt power delivery. Plus, it contains a portable battery, so you can charge it on the go without being plugged into the wall. Now, at the moment, it's only available with US plug socket, but mm-hmm. I'm really interested in getting one of them when they, you know, come out with the UK version.
Do you know if the one that had that like new technology for making it way more compact is readily available now? For a while, it was like,
yeah, I'm pretty sure the Apple Store sells it now.
Cool, yeah, that's something to get. That's the first.
It's called the Power Core, I'm pretty sure.
Okay, that's the first time that like a third party charger has been more appealing to me than just like Apple's bricks. You know,
yeah,
they're just ugly and don't want them. But if it's way more compact, then that's compelling.
Yeah, I think just like April time, late April, they started selling that, and it was kind of big because it was like Apple's first endorsement of the GaN or GAT, I can't remember which one it is, the gallium ox nitride or something like that. That kind of charger range where basically you can get higher power chargers, which are much smaller, and kind of put in, you know, Apple's chargers to shame, which are quite big. And this is literally like a laptop, a MacBook sized charger that also contains like a 5,000 milliamp hour battery. So you can charge your iPhone like twice off it on the go as well. It's cool.
But surely eventually Apple will adopt that technology and then raise the prices and everything. But
yeah, maybe do better than a 5-watt charger in the iPhone. One just last thing while we're talking about charging. iOS 13 has this feature, which is kind of interesting, which is like optimized battery charging.
Yeah.
I don't think we talked about it on the show before. Basically, obviously, we're coming off the back still of the iPhone battery gate problems, and Apple continues to be rolling out these technologies trying to increase the longevity of people's batteries, in addition to obviously doing the repair program stuff. And in 13, this optimized battery charging setting, which is on by default, what it does basically is it tries to learn your habit. And obviously, most people wake up at roughly the same time every day, and they go to work at roughly the same time every day and take their phone off the charger at roughly the same time. So what this does is, if you plug your phone in the night before, it will charge your phone up to 80% battery and then keep it there. Because obviously, when you're the optimum longevity for a battery is to keep it around 80%. So it keeps it at 80%. So even if it was going to get to 100% at 3 a.m., and you'd normally have the time between like 3 a.m. and 8 a.m. when you wake up or whatever, to and it'd be on 100. So it keeps it intentionally at 80. And the idea is it will keep it at 80 all the way up to like 750. And then it, finishes off the remaining 20% in that time frame ready for you to leave. So the idea is when you actually leave in the morning, it will be fully charged, but it won't spend the whole night at 100%.
Right. Which is clever. I mean, they've long had the feature where you don't really see it, but I guess unless you're like timing the battery charge time, but like it's 0 to 80 is like one charge rate, and then 80 to 100 just takes longer.
Yeah,
it slows down, and just for like the health of the battery.
Yeah, between 95 and 100, the percentage is like completely faked, basically, because they really like trickle charge at 95 to 100. So anywhere, if it says 100, it could really be like 96 in reality, but they just fake it.
Right. And so this is even on top of that, and you got a toggle for it. So you can say, I like this or I don't like this. Now imagine that feature with a battery case, a smart battery case made by Apple. It gets weird. So
yeah. And I actually run my battery case with all the way through on the, on my iPhone 10 on iOS 13 for the whole of beta 1.
Yeah.
And there are like, from what I can see, no considerations for the battery case tool. You know, like when we talk exactly. about the battery case came out with like, clever, smarter graphs or different UI changes. There's nothing mm-hmm. in that. It just treats it like iOS 12.
Yeah. So I turned that feature off just because of the battery case, because it was like, no, I want my phone. I really do want it to charge. I'm going to use it, all of it, like as soon as I can. And then I'm going to charge it some more because I'm going to, and I just didn't like the way that it made it unpredictable about what it would do. Because part of it is, trying to be intelligent. But, if you're using a battery case, then it's way less predictable, your charge times. Like you might get, never hit zero on one day. And then the next day, if your behavior varies, then you will just like, you'll get to zero way sooner and then actually use the battery case. And maybe that gets to zero. But I just didn't like the way it was unpredictable, where it's like, there's no clear intelligence about what's happening there. All right. Let's take a pause here and read this. Johnny Ive's leaving Apple. Do you see that?
Wait, what?
Yeah. Johnny Ive to form independent design company with Apple as a client.
I have not seen this.
No. Let's discuss it.
I thought you were joking.
I'm not joking.
I just found it.
It's a press release from Apple. Remember on the podcast when we discussed like the people leaving Apple's design team at a higher rate lately, and the weirdness about like Johnny Ive stepping back and then stepping back in, and how it was like they prepped us for like Johnny Ive leaving, and that he'd have like these people at Apple that were, all that stuff. Well, we've got some breaking news as of we're recording on this Thursday evening, on the week before the episode is released, that just came across the wire, like literally it's on businesswire.com. Here's the headline, and we'll unpack it together. Johnny Ive, that's the chief designer at Apple for years, to form independent design company, so outside of Apple, with Apple as a client. So he wants to design things. I haven't read the full release yet, but just from that, he wants to design things for Apple and others, but he won't be an Apple employee. That's my read so far.
Yeah. So the headline tries to not say Johnny Ive's leaving Apple, right?
Right.
But
right.
The first line of the actual press release is Apple announces that Sir Johnny Ive will depart the company as an employee. And this is literally come out as we're doing this. So this is kind of,
we've read it top to finish. But,
yeah. So June the 27th, they decide to announce this. This is an interesting one. He's, there's a quote from Tim Cook. Johnny is a singular figure in the design world, and his role in Apple's revival cannot be overstated. Apple will continue to benefit from Johnny's talents by working directly with him on exclusive projects and through the ongoing work of the brilliant and passionate design team he's built. I'm happy that our relationship continues to evolve, and I look forward to working with Johnny long into the future. Okay, so who's replacing him? Design team leaders, Evans Hanke.
Haven't heard that name before.
No, Vice President of Industrial Design, apparently. And Alan Dye. Okay, we know Alan Dye for Human Interface. So what happened to Richard Howorth, who was the industrial design guy before?
Yeah.
They report to Jeff Williams.
Who's the COO, Chief Operating Officer. Yeah.
And Williams led developer watch, blah, 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 blah. So does that mean Jeff Williams is heading design?
I don't think he's heading design, but he is at least like they're just not like A or B level executives.
So Apple's no longer going to have like an SVP of design.
Right.
That is wonky.
Yeah. It's different for Apple. They've not had this in recent years. See, what else do we have here? After nearly 30 years and countless projects, I am most proud of the lasting work we have done to create a design team. This is from Johnny Ive. Process and culture at Apple that is without peer. Today, it is stronger, more vibrant, and more talented than at any point in Apple's history, said Ive. The team will certainly thrive under the excellent leadership of Evans, Alan, and Jeff, who have been among my closest collaborators. You should read this. You're British. I have the utmost confidence in my designer colleagues at Apple, who remain my closest friends, and I look forward to working with them for many years to come. And that's all from Johnny Ive. And then
And they've made another hire. This is in a separate press release.
Okay.
Apple and today announces that Sabi Khan has been named to the company's executive team as Senior Vice President of Operations.
Oh, so that's someone under Williams who has a lot of responsibility now.
Yeah, and he will continue to report to Jeff Williams, COO.
Okay, so two things here. They're continuing to put more and more stuff on Jeff Williams, but also giving him a report or like more reports now, which is so like, you know, this long been said that like Jeff Williams is like, what if Tim Cook leaves or something? Then Jeff Williams is like the go-to guy, like Tim was for Steve Jobs. You know, he was like Steve's choice and the board approved. It seems like Jeff Williams is getting more and more in that role, including keynote time. And then we had the conversation about Johnny Ive, and like, if he leaves Apple, he would just go into retirement. He wouldn't go to another company like Airbnb, like a lot of the other people are, or Google. This isn't quite that. He's not just going into retirement. He's taking on more clients, including working for Apple, but not working for Apple, at Apple.
Yeah, like he's not going to a competitor, which is... Mm-hmm.
He's the competitor.
He's basically becoming he's basically running a design consultancy, right?
Yeah.
Where you can make random stuff that's unrelated to technology and also help Apple on quote-unquote exclusive projects.
Cars. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he said when if he wasn't going to be working at Apple, what were you doing? And he said, like, designing cups. So, I mean,
Some hot takes, like
yeah, and some ripples for sure. Like, what is Johnny Ive's influence in the company? And now it makes his timeline of leaving and coming back, and now he's leaving again, even more weirder. Like, they had the succession plan in place from like 2015 through 2017. Then Johnny came back. It's like, no, I'm leaving the company again. And now what? It's like another 2 years later, a year and a half later, and now he's out for good.
Where does this new hire that reports to Jeff Williams come from?
Apple Newsroom.
No, but where does the new employee come from?
He says he's worked. He worked inside of Apple. He's played an important role in delivering Apple's innovative products to market since the late 1990s.
A new hire, but an internal
promotion. Yeah,
promotion.
Okay. And it's kind of interesting because now they have SVP operations, which was like, you know, obviously what Tim Cook came from, right? Like, and then he was COO. So, wow. Okay.
Evans Hanke chooses to use lowercase for his first and last name on LinkedIn.
What happened to Howorth? That's my immediate question.
He shares very little information on Twitter or on LinkedIn. Industrial design at Apple is all it says, and the experience is Apple, and then Stanford University industrial and project design was the education. So maybe only ever worked at Apple. There's no photo there. And then Richard Howorth has His LinkedIn still shows Apple as design, but no specific title there. And he's British, so that's our processing this news on the air today for next week. It's a weird thing, but we could.
What do you think other people are going to interpret this as? Do you think people are going to be like, this is a disaster?
If you hate recent Apple design, like. You know, if you think that the keyboard is part of the design, that USB-C ports are part of design, that like phones looking one way or the other part of design, then you'll think this is good news, because then you get like some relief from that. But if you think that Apple's design is like what makes it successful, then you see this as like a big variable, even if Johnny Ive is like, you know, adjacently involved. So you can take it one way or the other. But I think it would be hard to argue that nothing will change here. You know, that you will not, like, you won't see the effects of this. Everything continues. And it may be that you'll see positives here and some experimentation because of change, but that, you know, you'll see this is because of that. This is a difference because of this one, you pinpointed to this event. But I don't think there's any way you can argue that everything will be exactly the same going forward, you know, just like it's not after Steve Jobs unfortunately passed away, and then told Tim Cook, do not think about what I would do. That this isn't a death, but it is, you know, a change at a very high level of the company. And so there will be clear and obvious changes that we'll see.
Yeah. In terms of like, what's he going to, if Apple's the primary client and they're working exclusive projects, that to me reads like Johnny Ive can now be even more selective on, you know, what stuff he actually wants to work on, right? Like,
yeah.
But if he was still at the company, he kind of has obligations over everything. And being essentially an independent design client is, you know, the point of being an independent company is you can reject stuff that you don't like. You can reject working on projects, right? Like,
Not want to work on that magic mouse. Give that to someone at Apple.
Yeah, like Johnny can't, like, Apple can't force this independent company now, even just because Johnny was working there for, you know, 50 years before, to necessarily do this and this. So realistically, you know, maybe Johnny's firm works on stuff like the Apple car, if that actually ever comes to fruition as a, you know, an actual car, an actual vehicle. Because, and then some of this stuff will be things that, you know, Johnny will be working on projects from over the next 3 years that haven't come to market, right? So I'd assume he will continue to be participating in bringing them to fruition. It's the new stuff that Apple's starting, you know, from tomorrow, that potentially he won't be interested in working on and will,
yeah,
you know,
and think about this at Apple. Like, so on one side, you've got a lot of services that are like a very big focus, and that's like, you know, you've got like app design and everything. And that wasn't even always him until like iOS 7 era, where it became, you know, on his table. But before that, it was physical design. And think about the physical design products, like everything. There's a lot of new stuff in recent years. Most notably, I think the Apple Watch being like from scratch design something. But now that that's out and maturing, it's going to be an iteration, you know, every few generations, not even every year, but like how it changes physically. Like inside might be redesigned for like what you need to accomplish that year, but like, you know, glance at an Apple Watch. How does it look? Like, it's a lot of iteration right now. And so Johnny Ive's got like, you know, there's only so much you can do with a phone in this decade, in this era, unless you just like do experimentation for the sake of it. And maybe there isn't like a curiosity there to do that. And if you've got a new team, and at the start, I can imagine that there's not a desire to shake everything up, like you might even do in retail with leadership changes there. Because there's not like a major opportunity that we're not accomplishing something that we could accomplish if we designed everything different. And then like the look of Apple was not what it is today. But over time you could see like, okay, leadership has been in place for 5 years now, and we've promoted the people that aren't even B level executives to have that title now, where they're senior vice presidents and they're on the leadership page. Then they could want to start putting their influence, which is like Johnny Ive inspired because of his leadership, but they've got their own twist to it, you know, that then you start seeing things look different because they want to, you know, move the ball forward, I guess.
Yeah.
And that could be exciting.
The Financial Times has like an interview with Johnny Ive that was obviously like embargoed, where they ask him some stuff. And he says what he will continue to be working on, like what we just said. He says there's projects that he's been working on for a number of years, and that it often requires enabling technology, like they're waiting for the technology to bring it to market. And he's beyond, quote unquote, beyond excited to continue to working on those. And there'll be some new projects as well that he'll get to contribute to. In terms of specifically what he's interested in, he says, interestingly, the work that we've been doing wearable technology, with technology becoming more personal, is it's an inevitability that stuff becomes worn. That wasn't opportunism. We saw that to be extraordinarily useful in relation to health and well-being. Mm-hmm. This is an area that I've been fascinated by, as is specifically addressed by wearable technology. So, yeah. At least for the Apple Watch, it sounds like Johnny's going to continue to be very involved. And he does say that Mark Newson will be joining him on working on projects at his new firm, Love From, which gives me the same name jitters as Find My, but it's not the greatest. Not the greatest name in the world.
It's like made in California, sort of, or designed in California. Love From. I've got one more thing to add before we step away from this topic. We mentioned that Evans Hanke is the person who takes over what, industrial design?
Yeah.
Now, okay. So I think we both assumed that was a male. She's a female.
Oh wow. Okay.
And which is, you know, like, promote her to the executive page, and then you're moving, you know, toward more fair leadership there. But we've also heard,
yeah, just
because
her name
before.
Was Evans, I just thought male, but. Yeah,
me too.
A female running industrial design, that's like fantastic.
Yeah, and we've heard of her before, and you're not guessing where yet, right?
Not off the top of my head.
Okay, so you know this is a really cool, like, trivia now, just from Google searching, so we can discuss this on the fly. You know the designed in Apple by California, or designed by Apple in California book, yeah.
The hard book, copy, okay, book. Yeah.
Okay, so in that book, there is, I believe, an original iPhone, like iPhone 1, that's like banged up and abused.
Yeah.
Okay, so on the website, dazeddigital.com, I found where they interview Johnny Ive, and they say, whose iPhone is it on page 135, the one that you've photographed after, quote, years of abuse? And Johnny says, that's Evan Hanke's iPhone, who manages the design studio. Isn't it cool? She destroys her objects. But I thought there was something so charming about that. I thought it was lovely to put that in. We designed tools to be used, and she definitely uses them! ! Yeah.
Wow, that is nice. That is
so she managed the design studio. That was her banged up iPhone, and she's not a male. So that's what we've got.
It does seem a bit awkward to me that these two designers now report to Jeff Williams. Like, I like Jeff Williams, but he doesn't seem like the Johnny Ive replacement, if you know what I mean.
He's like, you know, CEO in training. And
I'd have preferred if it had said these two designers now report directly to Tim Cook versus reporting to Williams.
Yeah, I don't know.
It seems like an awkward choice. Like, Cook has loads of people that report directly to him, but he no longer wants to be like directly reporting
to
design.
But does Cook care about design in the way that Steve did? I don't think so.
And do you think Jeff Williams does?
Maybe. Like,
maybe.
Maybe.
I don't know. It just feels like if they'd have gone, at least if they'd have said it was reporting to Tim Cook, that would be the more direct replacement to Johnny Ive, right? Because Johnny Ive reported to Tim Cook as well. So, and now it's like you've put a layer of indirection there to what we've previously considered the operations guy in chief operating officer. And that's not entirely fair, because obviously Williams has led, you know, a lot of presentations. Even if you just look at his keynote appearances, right, he's led like the Apple Watch announcement. They talk about he was introducing ECG and the design and stuff like that. So it's not like he's purely, you know, behind the scenes, you know, sorting out the supply chain. He's obviously very product focused, but
yeah.
It certainly wouldn't have been, if you'd have told me Johnny Ive was leaving and you asked me what they were going to do, I wouldn't have said, oh, the new guy's going to report to Jeff Williams.
I need to either write or find a really good profile on Jeff Williams, because I don't think we have one yet. You know, there are of Tim Cook and Johnny Ive and obviously Steve Jobs, but I'm not sure that there's a lot known about Jeff Williams, besides the fact that he drives a Toyota Camry.
Well, this was some shocking news for our pre-release podcast.
I told you at the beginning of this episode that we'd be doing something a little bit different in the second half. I did not mean this. What I did mean was, as teased last week, I have a new podcast series that we're starting with 9to5 Mac. It's called Watch Time. First thing I want to discuss, just a few things to just give you, you know, frame what this is and where it's coming from, and you can ask any questions of me if you have any as we go. But obviously, I love the Apple Watch. Like, I've been obsessed with it. It's like my favorite Apple product and just product in general since it came out. And the biggest thing is that, you know, it changed my life in making me like athletic. I never was athletic in high school or like in school at all. And I was actually very much intimidated by that. Just in like my upbringing, I wasn't exposed to sports and didn't have someone to like help me with that. So it was the Apple Watch that made me think like, oh, I'm a little bit heavier than I want to be. I want to get fit. Like, oh, I'm not as healthy as I need to be. I need to monitor that stuff. And so the Apple Watch has just made me like woke to all that, to put it one way. And it always spills over into the end of each happy hour episode, usually, where we've got a segment about, you know, what's going on in my world as it relates to the Apple Watch and fitness. Well, now I've got a podcast to put that in and dedicate it to. But it's not going to be forever, and it's going to be seasonal. Like, maybe it's got an expiration date from the start. So it will begin hopefully the week of July 4th, if everything goes as planned. You as of this recording, you should be able to find it as a podcast that you can subscribe to. If not, it will at least be on 9to5mac.com where you can play the audio. So there's that. And it's also going to be fortnightly, so every other week rather than weekly. And that way I can plan for the podcast, because it will be an interview series with both friends and colleagues in kind of my orbit, where it isn't just me, it's me talking to people about how the Apple Watch has changed their life through health and fitness as well, plus any other things that, you know, might come up. But the fact that it's fortnightly and it's got an expiration date of about 8 episodes, maybe 12, you know, for lucky, then that helps me know that I'm not going to burn out on it like I did with 9to5Mac Daily, which Chance Miller has been doing excellent at. You know, check out his run of that show. I think he's doing fantastic. But it's something that I can manage. And maybe if it does well, then every summer it can be a thing that I do. But my vision for it is to have about an hour of discussion with someone every other week, and to also have a separate news article come from that. So you've got, you know, kind of highlights from the episode, but you can hear the full episode for like the full story. So I'm really looking forward to that. And then in Mayo, I started talking to you about this idea back in January, right? Like,
yeah,
I went for a run one day and I had the idea, you know, there was a lot of talk about New Year's resolutions, and those get a bad reputation because people know it's like, it's common to set a goal in January and then, you know, fall off that goal, within, you know, a couple of weeks, maybe 3 weeks. And then you set like new starting points, but you might even wait until the very next year, and then you just never get to your goal. And whenever I lost like 50 plus pounds from tracking exercise with the Apple Watch and dieting so that my exercise isn't for nothing, it began in like April 1st, like, or the end of March. And there's something about, if you can pull it off on January 1st, that's awesome. But getting some like lead up to that is great, so that you know it's more routine, and by January 1st, it's just like normal for you. But I had this idea in my head that, you know, it's actually like New Year all year long. Like, as long as the calendar doesn't revert to the previous year for some reason, then all year is the new year. Yeah. Even if you're on like September 10th, you know.
Yeah, New Year's resolutions are stupid. Like,
I think they're awesome, but they're challenging.
The human, like, conditioned psyche is not, you know, the calendar is just made up by other humans. Like, there's no need to put so much pressure on like a certain day. You can start whenever you want. Like, and you can stop whenever you want. And just because you, like, so many people give up on New Year's resolutions because it's, you know, hyped as this thing where you're going to do it for the whole year. You're going to start on January 1st and end on December 31st. But that means if it's hard to do something continuously like that. And that means if you set your like mind up with this stage of, oh, I'm going to do it, you know, for the entire year. And then you know, you get sick one day, or you just don't do it one day and you forget. Mm-hmm. Then it's so much easier to be like, well, I'm done with that now. I failed, versus building up, starting on a random day. You know, like, you can do it in any day of the week, from any day of the, any time of the month. If you want to track like progress and streaks, that's fine, but there shouldn't be so much like emphasis on, you know, it's the minute, especially the middle of January. Is like, if you want to do like running, you know, it's all cold and rainy, and, you know, it's not the greatest even season to do stuff like that. Like, arguably people should start like fitness regimes in like the summer months because it's, you know, hotter and cooler and people want to be outside more.
So I love the spirit of a New Year's resolution, but it is very challenging and it can like actually be counterproductive if you, you know, fail at it and don't want to begin again until some other starting point. And you can even do that with like weekdays. Like I broke my diet. I can't possibly start dieting again until Monday, you know, and let me just take the next 4 days to veg out. But I do want to capture the spirit of a New Year's resolution in like the middle of the year, you know, into like the end of the year. And so that when you start, you're in like October or so, then like you're doing your 2020 resolutions now, you know, if it's like health related and fitness related. But to get that in the middle of the year is special to me. And then one small counterpoint. So where I live in South Mississippi on the Gulf Coast, I started running after the Series 2 watch came out with GPS. And it was like October, November when I actually like kicked into it. And it was perfect for me because it was cooler weather in the fall. And I think if I started running in the summertime where it's like 100 degrees outside, I would hate it and never do it again. So I can debate you on that one. That phrase New Year all year was like stuck in my head for months. And it just clicked like naturally in my head during like a long gym session in recent days to where I know exactly what I want the podcast to be, the format, the timing, how it's seasonal. Even with the name didn't come to me at the gym, but it was like at home that night when I was like taking a shower. It's like, I want a name that is not like, you know, working out with the Apple Watch. Like I don't want it to be that specific. I think watch time is simple enough and it kind of fits the theme of like happy hour, like a time there, you know, but it's not, it will be always about the Apple Watch, but unless we pivot to like, you know, Apple TV Plus and some video content, but that won't happen.
Yeah, you can do fitness for 3 months, then you can veg out on the couch with watch time of all the Apple TV Plus TV shows.
Yeah, spring, like fall and spring break, like kind of thing. Yeah. But I like the idea. Like if we want to talk about anything in the orbit of Apple Watch, I will be happy. I think the name fits. But, for the first like 8 episodes, maybe 12, I've got a specific list of people I want to talk with. Some are like my personal friends and like, you know, live around me. Some are internet acquaintances who I know the watch is special to them. And I haven't got like a green light from everyone yet. So it's all kind of be kind of like work in progress where I don't have 12 episodes to release now or even 8, but, I'm going to build it as we go. But I'm very excited and I'm looking forward to it. You'll also see, I mean, because it will be like personal friends of mine, you will see people that you've not seen on 9to5Mac or any other podcast. I think you will see people that you know from other podcasts too, because those are people like that are kind of in my headspace that I know, you know, what works for them. And it also, it does feel good that it's like the summertime. Like you said, there is some appeal to like getting outside in the summertime when the weather is nicer and everything. And I think there is some appeal to starting in the summer because when I was thinking about it before and I was like, I need a longer out goal so I can plan ahead. I was thinking maybe I'll start this when the new Apple Watch comes out, likely in September. But what I landed on was the summer's awesome. And if I do every other week, then it's scalable in terms of like my effort and energy. And then it could just coincide with the launch of the next Apple Watch, which, you know, none of it will be like, here's the rumors of the week for Apple Watch, because there aren't many anyway. But it will be about how we're using the current hardware. And then I think the finale will be like, you know, these are the prospects of whatever's new, if that's, you know, interesting. So I'm looking forward to it. Watch time. If you haven't yet, go find it, subscribe, rate, review, and I look forward to doing this project. So. All right, that's the Happy Hour podcast for this week. As ever, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at ApolloZach. Benjamin, you're on Twitter at
BZAMayo.
And also follow 9to5Mac on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at 9to5Mac. If you have any feedback, you can email us at happyhour@9to5mac.com. And we'll be back next week. Bye, everybody. And if you want to keep listening, you'll hear part one of the Watch Time podcast with me, Zach Hall, and Benjamin Mayo, my co-host here. So carry on if listening, if you want to hear that, or you can jump over to the Watch Time podcast feed and hear the same part one content plus part two. Welcome to 9to5Mac Watch Time, a fortnightly limited interview series exploring the world of Apple Watch and how it's changing people's lives. I'm your host, Zach Hall. And this week, I'm joined by my 9to5Mac Happy Hour podcast co-host, Benjamin Mayo. Welcome to Watch Time, Mayo. Thanks for being my first guest.
Hello.
Thanks for being here. So on Watch Time Episode 1, I want to discuss a few easing in topics with you, because we know each other quite well. And as the show goes on, I'll have different set of guests, and some I know well, some I won't know so well. So we'll get to a lot of different topics. And like I said, I really think that this podcast will get personal in the future episodes, maybe even in part two. But just some easy questions for you that we'll both discuss. Mayo, who are you and what do you do?
Hi, I'm Benjamin Mayo. I co-host Happy Hour with you. I write on 95 Mac. I do iOS development.
You've got a personal blog that you write for.
BZMA.com.
And you develop apps, right?
Pretty much. That sums me up pretty well.
What's one app that you would want to promote that you like, that you're known for?
Daily Dictionary is good. You get a new word every day.
Yeah. So that's for iPhone and the Apple Watch?
iPhone, Apple Watch, and iPad. And I'll probably have a Mac version Catalyst in the fall.
So. Awesome. Cool. We'll look forward to that. And then I am Zach Hall. I'm the lead editor at 95 Mac, if you're listening for the first time. And Benjamin Mayo and I co-host each the Happy Hour podcast every week for 95 Mac, which is a run through the weekly Apple news stories of the week. So there's that. Mayo, I want to get to the Apple Watch stuff. So do you find the Apple Watch useful in your kind of in your job? And if so, how?
In my job, it depends what you mean, because obviously it's pretty essential for my work as a, you know, essentially an Apple commentator, for lack of a better word. But if I set my like news blogging opinion stuff to the side and look at like development, and again, ignoring like, you know, I have to make watch apps, blah, blah, blah. I do use the watch for like scheduling stuff, especially when I have to like talk, because I do a lot of contract work with clients. Mm-hmm. So I have to keep on top of that. So I have the calendar. And I'm not like an obsessive like scheduler and calendar. I almost just use the calendar like reminders, but with dates. So I'll just have like an all day event, which is like, I need to talk to this person today at some point or whatever. Or it's, you know, I have a meeting scheduled for 5 PM, but like, so I definitely use the watch in that way to help my work that isn't, you know, just like tech commentary.
Yeah. What are three watch faces that you use? Maybe like you're using now and then some that are like often in your rotation.
Yeah, sure. So I've been a long proponent of the numerals face, which is the one which just shows like a digit hour and then it has an analog hands. But since WatchOS 6 has come around, I'm currently using I've kind of moved away from numerals, especially with the Series 4, and moved more towards the Infograph modular face, which I have, and on all my faces I have activity rings. So even on numerals you get one complication corner, I put the activity rings in there. On the Infograph modular face, I have activity rings as one of the circular complications. I have like things like weather. And then when I'm on a day when I'm like, maybe I think I'm going to forget to do, you know, my like daily fitness activity, mm-hmm. I will switch to the, and I don't know why I'm blanking the name of it, the Activity Digital, that one. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I will switch, I'll make a concerted effort in the morning to switch to Activity Digital, which is obviously has the activity rings really big and it has the stats for move, stand, and what's the other one? Move, stand, and exercise. That's
right,
what I call them, right?
Right.
But yeah. And it has those stats really big on the side. And that's that. If that watch face is on the screen, when I look at it, it's like in my head, I know I'm going to do some workout activity later. And then when I actually do the workout and I'm done, I then switch back to one of my other phases. It is more like a very big visual reminder for me that I haven't actually done, you know, my, not an obligation, but what I try and do for myself is, you know, some kind of workout every single day.
Yeah.
So
the Activity Digital face is one that I see in the wild often, like if I'm traveling or like at a public event and people kind of raise their wrist and you see their watch face turned on. I love seeing that because I'm like, what's their move goal and like how far along are they, you know? And if I see someone with like they've closed all three of their rings, I feel like accomplished for them. And if I see someone where it's like near it's in the evening and they haven't yet, I think at least they're focused on that because it's their watch face, you know, and maybe they won't meet today, but it's in their mind. So I like that face a lot. And like you, like at 95 Mac, we covered the Apple Watch as a news topic, and it's like my focus, especially, because I enjoy it so much, but not everyone at 95 Mac wears an Apple Watch every day or maybe even has one. Like it's not a requirement. And so I have to think about like the way that I use the watch for work. It's easiest to appreciate if I ever experience a situation where I don't have the watch for some reason, like, you know, a battery's dead or something, or is sent off for repair. Then you really get stuck, like sunk, or you know, pulled back into like 2014 before the watch was a thing, where yeah. you had your iPhone, and like that interaction was just way different with how alerts come in and how you, you know, manage that, plus, you know, work on this screen over here. And there have been times where I literally only remember I have a meeting, you know, a phone call or a video call with someone in like 10 minutes because it's on my watch face. And it's like, oh, that's today. And then the Siri watch face, it's gotten like mixed levels of love over the years, but it's so information dense, or can be, and dynamic. And one of the things that it can do is recommend a specific workout to finish, you know, your rings, like, a 12 minute walk or a 45 minute walk would get you there. And I've had that be useful too on the Apple Watch before. My go-to face these days is in the watchOS 6 beta coming out in the fall. But it's a very edited version of the California face that looks more like the classic utility face, but also has the watch rings on it. And I very much like that. But before that, like a version of Infograph Modular, which was activitied out, I like, or, something like I enjoy the Siri watch face. So just, but you know, one thing you can do on the Apple Watch is like have a lot of watch faces in the lineup and then swipe through them. And I very much like to do that.
Yeah. And notifications are really big for me on mm-hmm. the whole work side. Like you don't, it's kind of because, you know, you asked me before, like, and I only said like calendar, but the notification stuff kind of just integrates into your life to the point where you kind of forget about it. And like, I'm not, it's hard to, some people like, rebel or repel or get like repellent when you say, oh, I love just, you know, being connected with everything that's happening when mm-hmm. I'm getting the alerts on my wrist. But I really like it, and I much prefer it to like digging my phone out and it like vibrating or making a noise. So mm-hmm. with the watch, I can essentially just leave my phone on silent mode the entire time and just rely on like watch notifications. I have the watch on silent too, so I just get vibrations basically mm-hmm. in haptics. And, you know, if someone tweets me, if someone DMs me, I get it instantly. And I can stare at my watch, and if it says Twitter and I'm, you know, doing something else and I'm not in the mood to work, I don't have a compulsion to actually look at it and interrupt what I'm doing. I just put my wrist down and carry on, right? And I just have in my head a mental note that, oh, I actually need to go and look at this, you know, when I'm done, right? So if I'm out and, you know, with friends, I don't, you know, it's less obtrusive to me than getting my phone out. And even, and obviously we use Slack for communication, and I even just in the day I work from home, but I'd leave my laptop, my phone, you know, in the office space, and I go and make a sandwich. Like if something, you know, breaking news happens and stuff, and, you know, I want to be on top of that and getting the Slack alerts and, you know, getting Twitter alerts and even breaking news alerts on, from some things, you know, is really, really helpful to me. And I do miss it on those rare occasions where, you know, I'm not wearing the watch or it's run out of battery. And I'm generally wearing the watch every single day of my life, not mm-hmm. because of like obligation or someone's told me I had to, right? I just want to. And if I forget it or I leave the one, I went to see some family at Christmas time and I forgot my watch charger,
which is annoying. And you were at somewhere where you could go and buy one easily, right?
Like, yeah, that was bad. And then the very next day I like went out of my way to find a shop that could get it. The problem in the UK at the moment is that watch chargers are really hard to find for some reason. I don't really know. Like if you want to buy one at a retail store and you're not near an Apple store, it was like there were four places in the mall or the shopping like center. It was like not like one building. It was like spread across the town that supposedly would sell watch chargers, and three out of four of them were sold out. So it was like, you know, and I was when the fourth one was going to go, I was really, really worried that, oh, I'm going to lose my streak on my workout rings, and I'm not going to have the notifications on the way home and all that stuff. So like, it definitely has become part of my life in a very positive way.
Yeah, I have so many watch chargers just in case, like that lives in my car or in my backpack for that reason. And there was one day last winter where I had ran a half marathon with a friend and who will be our next guest. And we went to lunch with our families after the race was over, and neither of our watches were going to last through lunch, but we both wanted to you know, get the stand hours even, just like keep having the data go and not have a big gap in the middle of the day after the races. So before I went to before I met at the restaurant where they were going to, I went over to a Best Buy and like bought 2 watch chargers so we could both charge in the restaurant, like, and then put our watches back on. So I've been in that situation. And then regarding alerts, so one thing I wanted to discuss in this podcast in future episodes is not just like your physical health and how active you are and closing your rings, but even like mental health and anxiety and some things that I've dealt with in my life and depression. There's one thing that the watch helps me with there, and it's a little bit subtle, but you've got to find a sweet spot for notifications where for you having them silence helps you not be bothered by them. It's so,
and I don't have every single notification from my phone come to the watch. I'm very restrained in like specific apps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just so low friction to not hear it. Just feel a tap, and then you can glance at it, and it's gone without you even like engaging really. For me, I use the sound on so that the notifications are more distinct. One thing I do is, the idea of getting every email on your wrist sounds terrible, but I do like to have VIP alerts come to my watch. So if it's someone that I'm working with and there's information that they're going to send me that I'm going to want to have as soon as possible, they're a VIP in my email system. And so whatever they send will go to my watch face. And just knowing that I'm not like, I'm treating myself to being away from the iPhone, whether it's at the gym or on a walk or just like not on my iPhone and not on my Mac or anything. You can do that to treat yourself, but then if you go too far, then you start worrying, what am I missing out on? Like, am I indulging in this relaxation? And you've got to find a balance. But for me, the watch helps so much because I can have, if it's an important alert, like a VIP email message from someone that I'm working with, it's going to come to my watch, and all my iMessages and everything. And so that's important for me because if I don't do that, like too many emails would also create anxiety and like distraction. But if I don't, then I'm worrying, what am I missing out on? Am I, losing response? Am I being irresponsible at this point, by missing things? And so it really helps me balance that out. Before the Apple Watch, did you wear a watch at all?
No, I'm a newbie to the watch world. And I would maybe prefer an alternative way of getting the same information, but obviously that doesn't exist at the moment, if that makes sense. Yeah. So like the watch is the best guess, but in the future, if you had like contact lenses, obviously we're talking a long way away now, but if you had contact lenses that could do the same kind of thing in front of your eyes and I could have like my arms bare, I'd probably switch to that. Like I don't... the watch is fine and you get used to it, but I'm not like, I like it for what it does, not necessarily the form factor. I prefer if it didn't bulge out from the band, for instance, right? I use like the sport band primarily. I would love, like an Apple Watch that was just the thickness of the band that all the way around,
right.
Just making it more subtle and more discreet. The one thing that really does annoy me about the watch and is just when I'm wearing like a long sleeve shirt, my shirt will fall over the top of the watch, so then I can't see the watch screen when I raise my arm, right? Like, and so every single time you have to like use your other hand to pull your sleeve back or whatever, and that gets on my nerves. But luckily, most of the year I'm like short sleeves, so that doesn't come.
Yeah, you have to do the Tim Cook like keynote thing where he had the whole like iPhone 6 presentation. Here's Apple Pay, here's all of that, and he's wearing like a long sleeve shirt, and then he comes back for like the second half of the keynote, and he has his sleeves rolled up, and it's like the watch is the whole time, which is covered, and they'll never go sleeves again because of the Apple Watch. I used to wear different watches. So I think I wore watches like a kid, like just for whatever reason. Maybe my grandparents like bought me one and I wore it. But, in college, I had like a Fossil analog watch that looks kind of similar to what an Apple Watch was. Like it wasn't a circular display or watch face. It was rectangle. And it was like black, like this kind of space black watch look. And it had like very few things on the screen. Like I think the 12 o'clock hour was like a diamond or something. And then it had like three, like indentions for the time. And I didn't wear that for forever. And it was like a link bracelet too. But after that, I got pretty big into the Pebble smartwatch, which I thought I would hate. I thought it was totally dorky. But when I just bought one on a whim to like fulfill, a need to buy something, I guess, they were in stores in Best Buy, I fell in love with it very quickly. Like you got very little information out of that, like no health stuff at the time. You got to remotely control your music and podcast, but it was like play, pause, skip kind of stuff. It wasn't like what you can do with an Apple Watch where you choose. And you could see a message, but I'm not sure you could reply to it at the time. And it was all in like black and white.
Yeah, you couldn't reply on the iPhone.
Yeah, it was like all e-ink screen. And my take on it was like, this is to a Kindle as to like an iPad, where it's great in certain situations, like battery life for one. I charge it like every few days or like once a week. But there's so much I want out of it. I want to be able to summon my own music from it. And podcast, and I want to be able to reply to messages, not just see them. And it was cool, like swimming in a pool with the Pebble Watch, you know, you could do that, and you could like have your iPhone playing music on the side, maybe to a speaker, and like skip a song. That was neat, and see your messages. But it was such like tiptoeing in the water of like what a smartwatch can do. And I ended up selling the Pebble about a year before the Apple Watch was announced, because it was kind of rumored and I wanted to get like the most money from my purchase then. And I got like the full amount of what I paid for it, because someone wanted one that badly. And then I went like a year without a watch. And for me, there was an annoyance of like, well, now I'm used to having the time on my wrist, and I would feel that if I went out without my Pebble. And then when the watch came out, I just, you know, it was an opportunity from the start to like improve, but I also just adored it in so many ways. Like I'm sure we had a whole episode of Happy Hour where we just reviewed the watch ourselves, right? And
oh, sure. We talk about the watch loads on Happy Hour. I love the WatchOS software, like more than the hardware design. The WatchOS software is so good and mm-hmm. just so well refined, and there's so many little details about it that just make you smile and are like really, really cool.
Yeah. And are you like me, where if you don't have your watch for some reason, like that you don't have your charger, do you find that you look for the time of day from your wrist now, like as a watch?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do.
That is a thing, for sure.
It's annoying. Like, mm-hmm. It's just weird what your brain like adjusts to. Like I literally had a watch for maybe 3 months when I was like 10, because I bought it for my birthday or whatever. Yeah. It was like, you know, it wasn't a super expensive watch. It was just one of those like, but it was like stainless steel or whatever. But then I just never liked it, so I got rid of it, and then never wore a watch since, and then picked up the Apple Watch from the first version in 2015.
Yeah.
And now it's like, you know, if there was like a sonic boom and all smartwatches no longer worked anymore, I would have to get like a physical watch.
Right,
like,
right.
I always like hate it, but it's like, and before 2015, if you'd have been like, I don't know, I'm fine, I'll just check the time on my phone, and it's like, you know, I'll just look on my laptop or whatever. Yeah. Or just look on the time on the wall, because I like wall clocks.
So when you do your contact lenses that replace your Apple Watch, you'll also have like a very minimal wristwatch for the time.
Well, maybe if the contact lenses could show the time in That's your true. Eyes, yeah. It's different.
Wink for the time of day, right?
Yeah.
What about fitness trackers? Before the Apple Watch, did you ever experiment with fitness trackers? Like Fitbit was pretty big before then, and I kind of view it as like the BlackBerry to the iPhone.
The only kind of thing that I'd done was the pedometer in the iPhone.
Okay, that counts.
Right. Yeah, because since the 5S, they had a pedometer always on in the iPhone, like the M7 chip, right? The mm-hmm. motion co-processor. At the time, Apple didn't even have like a health app, so you'd have to use like a third-party app, like Pedometer Plus Plus or something, to even mm-hmm. find this information. And I would, for a while, I would, you know, try and beat goals on that, but it never really stuck.
Yeah, and you don't always have your iPhone with you in your pocket.
No, exactly, and especially like the, you know, the problem with steps, I find step counting to be quite like intangible, really. Like, it doesn't mm-hmm. motivate me more than just like calories or just minutes, if you know what I mean. Like saying 5,000 steps, 6,000 steps, 8,000 steps, 10,000 steps. I even think there's been research where like the 10,000 step thing was just like made up as a number. It's not even like
it's a nice number.
Milestone. Yeah, exactly. It was just kind of someone just said it one day and it kind of stuck in people's heads.
There's a reason that it's so de-emphasized on the Apple Watch. Like, I think there were early maybe slides from the original keynote where it was like previewed where steps were like more emphasized, but then it's not one of the three ring goals. You know, there's exercise and there's stand hours and there's how many calories you're burning, but not steps is like one of those goals that you need to close. And you can find apps that do it, like Pedometer Plus Plus, but you only see like the step count in the activity app as like a, you know, de-emphasized item. And I'm like you, like I've had very fit streaks where I don't hit 10,000, but I feel really great. Like I feel like I exerted myself. And I'm kind of on your page there. Like I think if you just walk as your exercise, then maybe 10,000 is a pretty good goal. you know, versus like 2000. But if you do other sort of sport, then maybe it doesn't translate as well. Yeah. And I find it actually very hard to hit 10,000 from working from home plus exercise.
Yeah. I couldn't even tell you like what my steps have been recently. Yeah. I've just looked and my steps today are, and for me, it's the end of the day here, it's 5,500. Yeah. Right. Yeah. And I'm certainly not professing to be the most fit person in the world, but I think I keep a pretty healthy lifestyle. And to me, you know, the steps goal is just like a fallacy, basically. And I think there's a, you know, Apple's kind of making a statement about not prioritizing it in the watch UI.
For myself, I had, I think, one fitness tracker, which was the Jawbone. Do you recall that?
Yeah, I remember. Yeah.
So they made Bluetooth speakers, and then they got into some health stuff. And then I think the Bluetooth speaker business kind of went out of business, and then maybe the whole business did too. And before that, I tried the Nike Fuel Band, but it was a good concept, but clunky in practice. And then I think that kind of inspired Apple Watch stuff because they made some hires there. But the Jawbone thing, like the thing that I liked about it was you would get a silent alarm, I believe, whenever you wanted to wake up, it could vibrate. It was no screen at all. It was just like vibration and then sending data to your iPhone to interpret. But that was the first thing that got me interested in silent alarms, I believe, and sleep tracking because it can do sleep tracking. But it's so like there's no heart rate sensor to it. It's just a pedometer really. And so it was very like low tech, you know, even for sleep tracking without a heart rate monitor, you're not going to get very far. So Jawbone for me, but then the watch clearly replaced that in every single way. Moving on to health and fitness, give us an idea of how you do use your Apple Watch for measuring exercise and measuring your fitness.
Okay, so when I was like 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, I used to be pretty good at swimming, like cantilever swimming, right? Mm-hmm. So I would do...
All right, that's a sneak peek at episode one of my new 9 to 5 Mac Watch Time podcast. Just search Apple Podcast or Overcast for 9 to 5 Mac to subscribe and hear the full episode, plus new episodes every other week during season one this year. Hope you enjoy, and thanks for listening. And 9 to 5 Mac Happy Hour will be back in full next week.